You're listening to a podcast from 702.
Here's to those who stepped up, spoke out, and made their voices matter. 702, remembering the youth who walked the talk in 1976.
7 after 10 on the Claren Magnatella show, KL 702, hanging out with Rueda Ritfin now, and to learn a little bit more about her and what gets her to tick, what puts her under pressure, and those sorts of other things. Rueda, good morning. Good to have you with us.
Good morning, Thabo. Thank you for having me.
Firstly, how was it like leaving your 3-year-old this morning in this cold?
So I've just moved to Gauteng from Durban. So we are definitely still getting used to this cold. We've never experienced this, on an ongoing basis other than traveling overseas. So it was a challenge getting here. What is not happening at the moment is any form of exercise.
certainly. And maybe for a while still, because this cold front does look to be here for with us for a while. Well, congratulations are in order. You are now in office, family, feet under the desk.
Yes. So officially it's 15 days with my feet under the desk. But as it happens when these announcements are made in November last year, generally your feet are firmly under the desk. So I say it's been 6 months and 16 days. But officially on the 1st of June. That's right, Thabo.
Yeah, the tag of being the first, does it concern you at all? Does it come with pressure? Is this something that you think about, being the first female CEO in the firm?
So for me, I don't allow it to put any additional pressure on me. I mean, the role in itself is sufficient pressure to keep me energized and excited and committed and motivated. The first title I realize is a motivation for other women, for other black women. And so I embrace that because I do feel that I have a responsibility to break that glass ceiling. And, hopefully that there's a 12-year-old black child watching this and saying, hold on, if this person can do it, then so can I. So I embrace the title of being the first, and I don't allow it to put any additional pressure on me. But I'm excited by it, and I'm excited at the fact that it does motivate other girls, other women. And I've been overwhelmed by the support of other women who've reached out to me to say, we really want you to succeed. What can we do to assist you?
Yeah.
That has been phenomenal.
I know it's a cliche. I mean, we say it all the time, but being a black woman in a male-dominated industry, right? Did you always know that you can?
I think deep down, I tried to believe it, the confidence comes, I think, with time. It comes with time, and it comes with experience. So as you go through your career, and you get to experience challenges, whether it is technical challenges, whether it is dealing with difficult clients or dealing with difficult situations or dealing with crises, that confidence of experience does come. And so I don't think you ever go into a role like this believing that you are 100% ready. I think anyone goes into a role like this thinking that you're probably 80% ready. And the other 20%, you learn on the fly,
yeah.
Right? And then key is just being confident to surround yourself with the best people and the best team who will uplift you and support you and give you those different views and those different ideas, because they come from different frames of references. And so that gives me the confidence. So I don't think when I walked into Deloitte, as a first-year trainee in Durban back in 1997 to do my articles, I certainly didn't, I looked around and there weren't people who looked like me, there weren't people who spoke like me, and the majority of the professionals at that stage were men. At that stage, I probably didn't think that this was a possibility. But it really is, You know, and I do, I've said this many times, that I do stand on the shoulders of giants who came before me. Mm. And a lot of those giants were not just, you know, women, but also men who paved the way and said things need to change. And as a firm, we were very deliberate about transformation, both from a race and a gender perspective. And that is how we've, you know, really been successful at transforming the firm and attaining a number of firsts, not just, you know, a first black female CEO.
Yeah. You are the fourth, I believe, consecutive black boss now at the firm, which I suppose that in itself also speaks about the continuity of the commitment at the firm for transformation.
Yes, these things don't happen by accident, right? So you have to have the pipeline of talent coming through. You have to be deliberate about making sure that you're bringing in that pipeline, that you're developing the pipeline, that you're creating opportunities for others. And that's what I believe was, very successfully done by my predecessors.
Yeah. Take us back. I mean, was it always going to be accounting for you?
So no, it wasn't actually. I always joke about growing up in a clothing factory. So my parents were both machinists. So I grew up in a clothing factory because at some stage when I was quite young, they left their places of employment and they decided to open up their own business. So we had a CMT business, which is cut, make, and trim, and we made children's clothing. And so every day after school, I would go to the factory, and sort of standard 5 or 6, I'm giving my age away now when I talk about standards.
I also caught up with grades a little bit later on, so you're comfortable, you're in good company.
Okay. So I learned to work on every single machine that there was in the factory. I learned all about production, and I loved clothing at that stage. So at some stage, I thought that I would go into fashion. And then I also have a passion for teaching. So, you know, I also thought, oh, I could be a teacher. I dabbled with the idea of being a doctor and even spent a couple of days at med school and decided that wasn't for me. And I guess it was really my time being in the clothing factory, understanding the finance side of it, understanding business, that led me to believe that I wanted to be a chartered accountant.
Right. I mean, if you made it to med school, it means you were quite book smart.
Yes, I was.
Yeah. Book smart. And was it pressure then in any way with your parents at that time to say, I mean, being that smart and say, no, I want to go into fashion? And how do you broker that conversation?
No, look, I think I got over the fashion thing by the time I got to matric. I think I realized that, that the fashion thing wasn't for me.
Yeah. And talk to us about med school. What happened? What changed your mind as you were going into there?
So to be honest, I think that I didn't want to be. I didn't want to do it. But as was the case back in the 90s, if you did well in matric particularly, then you would go to med school. So, you know, I think that was more the expectation of my parents, and it's something that they would have wanted me to do. But I think even before getting there, chartered accounting was my preference. And so it didn't take me very long to figure out that's where my passion was.
Yeah. And when you reflect on that, I mean, it's a conversation we're having now around 66.5% youth unemployment and whether or not we are doing enough in terms of guiding young people and having the conversation to say, these are the opportunities that are out there. These are the skills that you need. So don't go to med school because we've got thousands of doctors who are actually not being placed at this particular point in time, but rather do this because this is where the opportunity is. I mean, reflecting on where that was then and where it is today, what is your sense of what we should be doing, what we're not doing, and what we could be doing better?
No, without a doubt, there is a lot of education that we need to do at school level and then even post-school level around, people really understanding what the opportunities are out there. And firstly, starting off with what do we need as a country? What are the skills that we need as a country? So we do need artisans, right? We do need professionals as well. and really understanding, you know, or getting our youth to understand what those opportunities are. I mean, I remember going into a primary school, and we were part of a feeding scheme at Deloitte in KZN, and I went out to the primary school, and it was, you know, in a disadvantaged community, and these were little kids. They were about 7 or 8 years old. And the teacher said, who wants to be a doctor when they grow up? And I think one person put their hand up. And then she asked, who wants to be a chartered accountant? And nobody put their hand up. And then she asked, who wants to be a nurse? And I think 80% of the class put their hand up. And it's because I think that's all they've been exposed to, right? So there's definitely a lot of education that needs to be done at school level around the opportunities that are out there in the different fields. And then as a country as well, we, you know, not just an unemployment issue, we also have a graduate unemployment issue.
Yeah.
So, and it's a passion of mine, is what can, as we, as a firm, what more can we do to take our graduates from universities, from the technicons, give them an internship practical experience, which will really equip them to then go out in commerce and industry and play a role in society.
When you then look at the sum total of your education and the journey that you took, I mean, it's obviously not only academic education, but there've been some soft skills. There've been all sorts of other communication skills. Where did it all come from? When you said, did you draw from different parts of life?
So definitely, you know, drew from different parts of life. I mean, you know, I grew up in the 80s and early 90s, you know, which was a dark part of our country's history, and so grew up in a very I guess protected environment, and when I went to university, it was the first time that I got to experience different cultures, and that was a huge eye opener for me, and it was almost freedom for me in the first instance, and then one of the biggest moments of my life was being at university as a second year student and having Madiba visit us, and just that feeling in that big auditorium at university of this huge personality and this aura entering the room and listening to him was also just a real moment that I will never forget in my life. And then, you know, joining Deloitte as a first year trainee again, and just having that broad exposure and having the mentorship and the coaching that I had, you know, as a young trainee. And then another big part was, you know, completing articles and going to Deloitte in New York and spending a couple of months on secondment there. And again, that exposure to different culture and really recognizing that South African CAs are really, you know, I think that our reputation does precede us, and we are widely recognized. And walking through, and I always tell the story to our youngsters at work, you know, I'll never forget arriving in New York, and for the first week I got lost every single day on my way to the office. And I would fall. I fell once on the ice because Oof. I'm not used to walking in my high heels in the ice. And so the first week was quite stressful. And after a week, I remember walking to the office, and it was all going right. It, you know, I didn't fall. I didn't get lost. And I stopped before I entered the office, and I looked around at the hustle and bustle of New York, and I actually took a moment and I said, "Hey, I'm actually doing this." You know, small time girl in Durban is now working in New York City, and so it was really those experiences, those cultural experiences, being exposed to different people, learning from different people, having a number of coaches and mentors. That I think, you know, I drew on throughout my career and continue to draw on throughout my career.
011-883-0702 if you've got questions for Rueda Redfern, CEO at Deloitte Africa. She's hanging out with us. I see some questions already beginning to come in on the WhatsApp line. You can send those through as well if that's where you want to send them through. 072-702-1702. That is the WhatsApp line. Of course, there's still lots to talk about with Rueda to get her sense also on leadership in general in the country and where the gaps are and what we need to fulfill. But I'm more interested in her story and, being one of the most sought after minds in the country, particularly in the space of accounting. Maybe before we get to that, let's talk about UKZN. Most people, when they get to tertiary institutions, that's where they are, in a sense, exposed to politics, of the country and what was happening at the time. Were you shielded at all from that? Did you experience it? Of course, you were affected by it, because politics affect all of us. But did you get a sense that you needed to enter that space at all?
So I probably experienced it before I got to UKZN. My English and history teacher in high school was an activist. English and history, well, particularly English, was a subject that I really enjoyed at school. And I had a really good relationship with this particular teacher, and he really challenged my mind around the future of our country, my own views, and that was my first kind of opening, I guess, to what was happening, as a young teenager, what was really happening in the country.
Yeah.
And then I guess, getting to university, which, in our country has always been a hotbed for politics, right? Is you without a doubt, you're exposed to different people and different minds, and you're influenced. And I think that there's such change that takes place at universities that I couldn't help but not be influenced by what was happening at the time. And that's why I gave the story around Madiba coming to the university.
Yeah.
At the time, and what a big impact it had. And just recognizing that, what was going on in the country and these opportunities that were now, going to arise for people like me who 10 years ago would never have even dreamt of, even going to university and going to a firm such as Deloitte. So it was a pretty special time in my life, I guess.
Yeah. And do you come out of there and say, right, Deloitte it is then, and that's the end of it, and that's where I'm going?
So I did. I had, as a student, gone to Deloitte, and, there was something about the air at Deloitte that was just so special that I felt, no, this is the place for me. And so that's the only firm that I actually applied to do my articles. I was that determined to get in. And I also felt that it was a place that, I could develop.
Yeah.
And I compare, Deloitte of today. I'm firmly of the belief that we need to create the environment where our people can be themselves, where I can come to work every day and be my authentic and genuine self, and not have to fit in and not force myself to be someone that I'm not. And that's the type of environment, the inclusive environment that we're trying to create. And I think that we do have, in the firm. And so I think that opportunity to make a difference is something that is really important to me.
Yeah. As I'm saying, your most sought after skill, most sought after mind. Why choose to dedicate most of your career there? Why just not explore the areas?
So I did. I mean, I did leave Deloitte at one stage back in 2012. I went out into commerce and industry where I was the CFO. And I thoroughly enjoyed that time. In fact, we were just talking about it before the show. I do believe that the time that I spent gave me different skill sets and just also allowed me to appreciate, what different cultures are like in a corporate environment. Mm. Because culture is something that is really difficult to explain. When you ask me what is the Deloitte culture, it is really difficult to articulate in words what it is. But I know that there is something so special about it. And so when I returned to Deloitte, I realized that this was the place for me. This is the place where I can be myself. And I now have the opportunity to make sure that this is a place that is comfortable for everyone into the future.
All right, fantastic. Some questions coming through, and we'll take calls as well. 011-883-0702. Rueda Redfern, in case you're wondering who we're talking to, you just tuned in. She is hanging out with us, and she'll talk about the audit profession in a moment. It has been receiving a lot of flack of late, and how do we fix this, and how do we take it forward as a profession? But also, we'll play you a pic of her favorite music in case you're wondering what she listens to when she's having a downtown. We'll come back with that in a moment.
Here's to those who understood that a step in the right direction can move a nation forward. 702, remembering the youth who walked the talk in 1976.
We are with Rueda Redfern, hanging out with her today and getting to know her a little bit better. Before we continue with the conversation, listen to what she listens to in her downtime.
Like a small boat in me. No, I've still got
Rachel Ashley Platten. She is an American singer-songwriter. That song called The Fight Song. You still got a lot of fight left in you?
Oh, yes.
What happens to you when you hear that song?
So for me, the song is really about overcoming adversity. So what happens to me is I stand up straighter and I think about what my purpose is in life, and I think about what it is that I want to do and what it is that I want to accomplish. It just motivates me. It was a song that, many years ago in my life, I myself went through a number of a personal health challenge. And so it became almost an anthem song for me that I would play every single day just to remind myself that I do have a lot of fight in me. And so I play it quite often. I play it when I'm running, well, shuffling more than running, to help me get through that last kilometer. So it's definitely my power song when I'm running as well.
Yeah. What is that one thing? I think it's Madiba at some point who says, you got to have that one idea that you're willing to live for, and if need be, to die for. I think he was quoting somebody else as well. Do you have that one thing?
So it is, and I know it's going to sound cliched, but I really believe that we have a responsibility to leave the world in a better place that we found it in for the next generation. And it really, you talked about what was it like to leave my four-year-old son this morning. And it is when I look at him as a little boy and I think, what is the world that I want to leave behind for him? And how can I make some contribution so that, he's in a better position than I was? And so that's what it's all about for me, really.
Yeah, indeed. Jonathan is calling us from Joburg. Hi, Jonathan. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. Good morning, Rueda. I just want to use the opportunity to congratulate you on your appointment. And at the same time, I just want to ask you a question. I myself, I'm an ex-Deloitte employee. My question to you is, how will you use your influence to transform Deloitte? Because based on experience, as I said, I'm an ex-employee, transformation is non-existent at Deloitte. So basically, I just want to find out how will you use your influence to equal the playing field.
Jonathan, appreciate the call. Yeah, but there you are. I mean, it's a question, I suppose, that many people tend to ask executives when you get to that position, especially on the ticket of transformation.
No, thank you, and thank you, Jonathan. And I'm sorry that you didn't experience what I experienced as a firm, but certainly, you know, I really believe that we need to be deliberate about transformation. So we have targets that we've set at Deloitte, in that we want to be 51% black owned, and 40% women owned. And we take that very seriously. We monitor that. We make sure that we are creating a pipeline to achieve that. And that's the short-term target, right? We know that we need to then go beyond that. And I always talk about the fact that as remarkable as it is that we have a first black female CEO, we need to get to the point where it is unremarkable to have a black CEO, yeah. And it is unremarkable to have a female CEO. So I think, and I've made this commitment to the organization that transformation is something that I am absolutely passionate about, and it is something that we will continue to drive. And for me, it's not just about the numbers. It is about making sure that the organization, that the profession, is in a place where it is inclusive, and it is an environment that every person, irrespective of where they come from, what their belief systems are, but it is a place where everyone can thrive.
Yeah. This one from WhatsApp saying, hi, please ask Rueda what advice she would have for a 35-year-old BCom graduate needing to do honors.
So I think that, you know, a lot of our, and I learned this when I was the staff partner back in Durban, that some of our most successful graduates who joined us to do articles were those who didn't, who joined us later on in life. So those who were in their 30s, it's not the norm, but they were very successful because they've got life experience, they've got the social skills to interact with our clients. And so I would firstly encourage you to pursue it. Anyone wanting to apply for articles, you go onto our website, www.joindeloitte.com. And you put your application in, and the team will contact you, within a few days to take you through a process. So that's how you would go about applying for articles. And so my advice is, go out there. Don't be afraid of rejection. It's part of life, but get out there, get your application in, and go for it. If you've got your honors already, you'll be comped. You're almost there.
All right. You can send more questions than 011-883-0702, 072-702-1702 for Rueda Redfern around the profession, around what gets her going and what drives her. And maybe while we are there, Rueda, you're coming in at a time when, I mean, there's a lot happening in the country, and a lot of it, having to do with rebuilding, renewing, cleaning up institutions, and so on and so forth. And it's a time when the auditing profession has been receiving a lot of flack, particularly in recent days, and things that are being revealed coming out of the Commission of Inquiry into state capture. How do we enhance? I mean, obviously you can't answer for the whole entire industry because you're not responsible. But generally, overall, how do we enhance the view and the image of this particular sector going forward?
So look, let me start off by saying that, earlier on I talked about how well-respected South African CAs were at the time when I was working in New York and for the period thereafter. And we all, as a profession, really want to get back to that point. So that's where I will talk for the entire profession, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Every single partner, every single manager, every single professional wants the South African CASA designation to be well respected. And so what's happened in, with the recent corporate failures, not just in South Africa, but even globally, a number of questions are asked about what are the reforms that need to take place, not just in the audit profession, but in the entire financial reporting ecosystem to bring about change. And so I think it is right that those questions are being asked, because it forces us then to critically look at the way we conduct audits, the way we run our organizations, and really, you know, arrive at different solutions for making sure that we achieve that. So we as a firm are involved in a number of engagements with, you know, with the professional bodies, you know, both in South Africa and outside of South Africa. And we really want to be part of the solution and part of this reform, not just in the profession itself, but also in the entire financial reporting ecosystem. And so we're working through that. You know, we've had a number of engagements with our clients, with non-executive directors, where we've brought subject matter expert in, you know, Sir Donald Bryden, who's a UK specialist, and a number of other specialists to really try and enhance the conversation so that we start moving towards solutions that will, you know, eventually result in an enhanced profession.
Yeah. We're coming from trading under the pandemic. We are moving into trading now under immense pressure coming from geopolitical factors and market volatility. How do we weather the storm?
It never ceases to amaze me how resilient South Africans are. And I've seen this over and over again. What we have to do is get the economy growing, and we as a firm have a role to play in that. So we have to get the economy going again, and I think we're starting to see that. You know, I was just a week ago flying out to Italy for work, and our airports are busy. You know, I bumped into a number of executives who are, you know, going to visit shareholders after 3 years and get out there. And I really think that, you know, so the resilience of South Africans is key. I think business is really getting together to say, you know, what can we do to get the economy going again? And so there are a number of, you know, initiatives, again, that we as a firm are involved in to get this economy growing so that we can, you know, get over what's, you know, these issues that we faced over the last 2 or 3 years. And I think we just, you know, everyone wants the same thing. We all want to tackle big issues around unemployment, financial inclusion, health inclusion. And so, you know, I don't believe that government alone can do this. I think that business has a huge role and responsibility to play in solving for some of these issues that we face as a country and as a continent. And therefore, part of my vision for the firm is to use the collective IP of the 7,500 people that we have in Africa, and then our global network to put together some of the greatest minds and to play a meaningful contribution in value creation across the continent and in solving for some of the social issues that we face as a continent. And so that's part of my vision, and that's what we're busy working on, you know, you know, hopefully we'll play a much larger role in the next few years.
All right. Hear more on Rueda's vision for Deloitte when we continue next, but also more on the vision she has for her leadership and those who lead alongside her. You can give us a call, 011-883-0702, with your questions for her, or send them through on 072-702-1702.
Used to those who understood that change comes from turning words into action. 702, remembering the youth who walked the talk in 76.
But it is just before the 11 o'clock, I think 10 minutes or so before 11 o'clock here on the Clement Manatela Show. I am Thabo Mdluli in for Clement Manatela on hanging out today with Rueda Redfern, the CEO at Deloitte Africa. Rueda, not only are you a fighter, but you're also a runner, right? You're saying it's a little bit cold now. Of course, you're not doing any of that. talk to us about riding. Where did you pick it up?
So I think, Thabo, you said earlier that I was book smart. So I was never the person at school who was going to win any medals for any sport. In fact, I used to take, and I wouldn't encourage this, but I used to take sick notes from my parents saying that I couldn't participate in PE. But when I then, you know, got to my career and I started working, I realized that I needed to find ways to balance a stressful career, you know, with keeping fit. And so one day I was with three of my girlfriends out at dinner. And as you do after dinner, or at about 11 o'clock at night, we decided that we were going to enter the Two Oceans Half Marathon.
Now, of course, yeah. That's what you do after dinner. I mean, exactly. Really. I mean, yeah, of course.
Bearing in mind that I hadn't even run more than 2 days in my entire life at that time. And so the four of us thought that this would be a good idea. And the next morning, we then went out and we met at the Durban Promenade. And we couldn't do one, we couldn't finish a kilometer. But we decided that we were going to do this because it was a long weekend in Cape Town and it's something that we could do, going from 0 to 21 Ks. And so, in typical Rueda fashion, I put together a running program. I did a bit of research. I had goals. I put it up on my wall. I put together my playlist, went out and bought the kit that I needed, with the fancy watch and the shoes. Didn't really help for a long time. And then just got out there training. And so began my passion for running. And it's really, for me, a meditation. It is my unwinding after a long day, or before at the start of a day.
Yeah.
And generally in that first kilometer, I'm thinking to myself, why am I doing this? I should be in bed. Is this ever going to end? My feet hurt. And coming up with 1,000 excuses for why I should stop after, 5Ks.
Yeah.
And eventually the noise in my head stops and I stop thinking and I just start looking around and enjoying the surrounding. And it, 2Ks into it, I've warmed up and it's a great feeling. And yeah.
And is there a race that you still want to run?
My husband's going to kill me for saying this, but, it is on my bucket list to do the Comrades one day. I always said at the age of 50, I want to do Comrades. We'll see about that.
That to take it out of you. Well, listen, being a numbers person, of course, you broke this down quite well in one of the interviews. The data that supports the call for women leadership. In fact, in one of the interviews, you say more women in leadership create more women in leadership, which is quite profound, right? Mm. And is that what your leadership at Deloitte you're hoping will achieve?
So representation matters, and representation can be a catalyst for change. And I'm quite proud of the fact that of my new executive team, and there are 14 of us, 43% of the executive team are women. And I've seen that diversity. Just this week we had a two-day executive meeting. I've seen the conversation just being uplifted because of those diverse views that come about. And it's diverse in not just in gender, but in racial composition. There's representation across the continent. And so the richness of the conversation is there. And there's, I talked about women, approaching me at the end of last year when the announcement was made, just offering their support. And also the young women in the organization and outside of the organization phoning me and sending me messages on LinkedIn saying, we really believe, having seen you achieve what you have and becoming a CEO, that we now can do the same. So it really does make a difference. It really, really does.
Some questions coming through for Rueda. How is Deloitte intending on combating the brain drain in the auditing profession? Yeah. How are they trying to incentivize talent to stay in the country? Good question. And this one from Homozo, saying, given the state of affairs in the country, would you advise graduates to pursue entrepreneurship or as opposed to positions in the corporate? And what support would an established entity like Deloitte give to these emerging entrepreneurs?
So there's no doubt that there is a brain drain in South Africa, and that's not limited to the accounting profession. That's graduates across the world and across South Africa. And the other thing that has happened over the last 5 years is globalization. Now, globalization has, slowed down in the last 2 or 3 years as a result of the pandemic, but I think it will continue, but at a slower pace. So, you know, we have to make the continent attractive again for our graduates. And sometimes I do think that we need to give our people the wings to fly and hopefully create the environment where they choose to fly back home.
Mm.
So there is no doubt that there is benefit in global opportunities, but we then need to create this environment where these experts who go out there and get this experience now come back and contribute to our continent. So I am a passionate South African, and an even more passionate African. And yes, I see challenges in Africa, but I also see those as opportunities. And I really believe that South Africa and the continent is a place of huge resources and tremendous opportunities. And so we do have to, you know, work collectively to make sure that we bring our talent back. So I talk about this, the talent conundrum that we face. There's a lot of talk around the Great Resignation, the Great Reset. But what is happening in Africa is that we have 40 to 50% of the African population is under the age of 14 years old. Whereas what's happening in many parts of Europe is that 30% of the population is over the age of 60 years old. And what's going to happen over a period of time is that there is going to be if you look at what will happen to labor force by 2060, we expect the South African labor force to increase by around 37%, whereas the labor force in many European countries will actually reduce in size. And so there is this huge talent pool that will emerge in Africa. And the trick now is, how do we create capabilities on the continent for the continent rather than it continuing to be exported into other parts of the world?
Look at time. It's completely out. Rowena, appreciate your time. I don't think you even expected it to go this quickly, right?
No, definitely not.
It went so quickly, but we thank you very much for hanging out with us today.
Thank you. That was huge fun, and happy Youth Day to all your listeners out there.
Fantastic. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you.